A couple hundred years ago, the only thing you had to worry about was a hangover.
You're telling me you're an investigator?
More or less.
Today, because of your curse thingy, you can't sleep with anyone.
I'm not a taint. I'm your boss.
Or else you might feel a moment of true happiness.
You got a real addiction to the brooding part of life.
Lose your soul.
Except for the bulk of it, where I was nearly tortured to death.
Become evil again.
You're a demon hunter.
Rude demon hunter.
And kill everyone.
It's fucking fantastic.
I love that sound.
Thanks, Cornelia. I always appreciate your perspective.
I was flipping off the ghost, Rex.
Yeah, way to make me nearly fuck up our room silence.
You're welcome. Welcome to Beer with Puffy, everyone. I'm Josh.
I'm Rex.
I mean, welcome to Ale with Angel, everyone. I'm Josh.
Oh, right. I'm Rex.
Didn't mean to give you all a heart attack for a second there. It's not time yet.
No.
Not quite. But today, instead of Beer with Buffy, we got a real nice Angel episode for you. It's season 3, episode 11, Birthday.
Birthday.
It's your birthday, and we want you to have fun. It's your birthday, so let's party, everyone.
On Caitlin's last birthday, I woke them up with that.
You're a sick fuck.
Loved it. It was hilarious.
Good, good. Wait, but were you dressed as a cartoon character furry thing from Chuck E. Cheese?
No, I was probably naked.
Well, that's his own kind of fun.
Yeah,
I guess if you're into
If you're gonna celebrate a birthday, do it in a birthday suit.
Hey-o. Good God! All right, Rex, we got a lot of shit to do. Why don't you?
Yes, we do.
Why don't you read us some? Why don't you fuck us some doodle doos?
I will not, in fact, fuck any doodle doos, but I will read off a list of them that you probably want to.
Boring.
We have Liam Neville, Monica Fonseca Taez.
Close enough.
Closer than I've gotten yet. T Subba Spike, Audrey, two French last names, Bridget McCloy, Dead Serious, Allie B, Nathan Lancey, Dulcinea, Rachel Doodledoo, DTS, Cubby the Seal, Mr. Tabalicious, Sandra Craig, Jay Sommer, Catherine Parkinson, Karen Moon, Chris V-Man, Pat Like Turtles, bad at changing their name heaps, Two Tone Don't Fucking Call Bradley Cooper Gnome, Father Defenestrato, Methuen de Doodledoo, Kelly MC, Jesse Rain, Alex from the Heart, and Carrie Phillips. Thank you so much. Without you, this show literally isn't possible.
I just want to point out, I'm fairly certain that Pat likes turtle singular.
I said Pat like turtle.
No, you said there's definitely an S. There's multiple turtles.
Hold on.
Pat is incapable of liking multiple turtles.
Pat like turtle.
Pat is mono turtle.
Okay, Pat like turtle.
Mono.
I got it right now.
Turtle fucker. I don't know what sound a turtle... Actually, no, I know exactly what sound a turtle makes when they come, because there's a video of it.
There are.
It's great.
Anyway, yes, if you'd like to support our show, you can do that by going to patreon.com/beerwithbuffy. Give us your money.
Good job.
Yes.
Yeah. Do that. Give us all your money.
But as always, the number one way that you can support our podcast is to review us on iTunes.
Icky Tunes? I don't know. It started with an I.
Yeah.
Mm.
And sometimes. I mean, it is Apple.
Yeah. Not U-Tunes, because they don't care about you.
No.
iTunes.
Yes.
Because they only care about themselves.
I mean...
Just like us.
It's Apple.
Yeah. So... Give us an iTunes review.
Yeah.
Fucking do it.
Yeah, because honestly, we're, again, at 69 reviews. Nice. But when we get to 75, we will be giving away a free hoodie.
Well, we also have a voicemail today that we've been sitting on for a minute because we've been too fucking tired to tackle it the last few times.
Yeah.
But I was feeling spunky today. Froggy, in fact.
Froggy?
Yes.
You're going to take a leap?
Spicy. We're taking a leap, buddy.
Okay.
We're taking a leap. We're taking a quantum leap. with Scott Bakula. But we're not going to interview him. I mean, I'd take that interview if he wanted to.
I mean, if random celebrities just started messaging us and be like, hey, you can interview me, whether they had anything to do with Buffy or not, I would probably be like, yeah, sure.
I'm still going to be like, so what was your time like on the set of Buffy and or Angel? Well, I wasn't on that show. Cool. Can you tell us about it anyway? If you could just speculate.
Tell us about a time you watched the show.
Any experience whatsoever that you've had. Well, actually, I've never even seen the show. I don't know who you people are. Why am I talking to you? Well, sir, you asked to be on our podcast. That's fake news. I regret saying that. Because we're probably going to hear that a lot for another 4 years if things don't go right in November. Anyway, everybody put on your big latex feet and become a possessive freak about a ring because we're going to Mordor with Monica Fonseca Tellez. Oh, yeah. First of all, new rule, everybody. I am not airing anything that's too long. I don't want to edit it down. If you can keep it down to a tight minute, I'll air it. Other than that, we're just going to maybe talk about it if we like you enough. And Monica, you passed that second part. You seem like a swell gal. So we're going to answer some of your questions, respond to some of your comments. You had a lot of compliments for us, a couple suggestions, etc.
Yeah.
So we're gonna try and blast through.
We like compliments.
Our little list here, but you set a record.
Yeah,
that was a solid 15 minutes of voicemails, so that's what took us so long.
Yeah, we've been having a bad habit of recording in a time crunch.
Yeah,
and when you're recording in a time crunch and our raw episodes are sometimes upwards of over 2 hours
on a bad day, 2 hours.
Yeah. So, and I've had no Adderall for the last several months.
Yeah. I absolutely so, like, was not going to tackle this while Rex had no Adderall. Fuck that.
Everyone say a great thanks to Josh because he does the editing and he makes me sound good, even though when I don't have my Adderall, it's a fucking mess.
Sometimes it makes it an easy decision about what to cut. But anyway, Monica, first thing right out of the box, he talked for a bit about not being a Valley girl despite your accent. I mean, you're from San Diego. Well, me personally, knowing absolutely nothing about California, you sounded like a Valley girl.
A little bit.
I know. So methinks the girl doth protest too much. I think you're a Valley girl. I'm just, it's been decreed.
More importantly, if you want to be a Valley girl, own it.
Own that shit.
Yeah, just.
Yeah.
You don't even need to be in California if you want to be.
Yeah.
Pick the demographic and, you know, within certain guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it.
Yeah. I mean, we're in the Midwest, but we're also in a Valley. We could be Valley girls if we wanted to. You can be a Valley girl anywhere.
Yeah.
I went to two different schools with the word Valley in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even have to hardly leave home. So, you know, anything's possible. Rainbow. The more you know. You said for a while you couldn't tell the difference between me and Rex. That's because I am Rex. And you're Josh.
No.
See, now you got me all confused. God damn it.
No, we've actually gotten this a few times from different people, that especially in the early episodes, people couldn't tell us apart. And I don't get
early
that.
Episodes. Fucking Kefro Gnome told us she couldn't tell us apart in like her last email, which granted she hasn't been keeping up on us, but she's caught up now, I think. And everyone probably thinks Kefro Gnome is like one of our close buddies. We don't know who the hell she is.
No.
She's a complete fucking rando that we decided to air on our show a lot. She can't tell us apart. So you're not alone. You're not alone. I don't know what it is, but there is a thing,
well,
psychologically speaking, where you're more likely to hang out with people that sound like you, and it's completely subconscious.
And it's not even just that. It's the more time you spend around another person, the more your mannerisms and pronunciation of things start to kind of sound the same.
A little bit of a chicken and egg situation.
Yeah. And We've been friends for quite a while, and for a big chunk of that time, we hung out constantly.
A very long while. I remember the beginning.
So do I. It was September 2011.
The floor was lava. Literally. The pool of ethereal goo was just forming into tadpoles.
Anyway.
But that was just my dad's sperm, and here we are. He went,
moving on. We got to get through this quick because my laptop does not have much battery left.
Oh, no. All right. A likely story. You said you liked our interviews with Harry Groener and Mark Metcalf. Of course you did. They're amazing.
You had said something along the lines of having more questions for him and everything. And I think both Josh and I can agree that there are thousands of questions we did not ask.
Oh, there's like that was my first comment. An hour is not nearly enough. We could have talked to them all fucking day.
Yeah.
But these people have lives.
They do not want to talk to us all fucking day.
These people have lives. They're professionals. It is rude of us to expect them to talk for even over a half an hour, but they were such wonderful people.
Yeah.
They stuck with us for upwards of an hour. I know for a fact that it's the longest Mark Metcalf interview on YouTube right now.
Which is
the rest
awesome.
Of them are only like half hour to 45 minutes. So we're already overstaying our welcome.
The other problem is when we are interviewing them, it does not feel that long.
It's over like that. I'm like, oh shit, we're out of time?
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Oh man, it was difficult to cover any of the ground that we really wanted to cover with either of them.
But also, if you go back and you watch that Mark Metcalf interview, multiple times he comments on, wow, we've been doing this interview for, I don't know, 2 weeks now. We got a couple of good jokes out of it. He was a great sport. Fucking loved him.
Yeah. The other thing you mentioned is before we get our next interview to kind of open it up to audience questions from fans.
And I'm cool with that.
I am too. The problem is with Mark, we had a little bit better notice, but with Harry Groener, it was especially like, oh, we found out we're interviewing him and it was going to be right then.
He wanted to do it right away. We only had like a couple days prep.
Yeah.
And I tried to put it off a month and they were like, no, let's do it right now. I was like, son of a bitch.
And we had a little bit better notice with Mark, but we also kind of wanted the interview to be a sort of surprise.
Right. And both times I wanted it to be a surprise.
Yeah, exactly.
Because both times now it's lined up that we did the interview right around Christmas time.
Yep.
And we were taking a break. We wanted to come back in making a splash.
Yeah. The other thing is particularly without Twitter, it's kind of hard to get audience questions effectively.
Well, I was thinking we'd just put it on the Patreon. But anyway, we'll consider it.
But yeah, it all kind of depends on the timeline of when we get our next interview, how much time we know about our next interview before it happens.
We'll do what we can.
Next, we love the idea, though. That's what's
important. Yeah, great suggestion. So next point, yes, we're old, but funny is funny, goddammit. Like, I may be endlessly quoting Ace Ventura, which is notoriously the worst aged comedy that ever happened.
For reference, because Josh didn't actually mention what he's responding to, Monica mentions because of her age, she doesn't really get a lot of the references that we make all the time. And you know what? That's fair. We're old.
I mean,
sorry.
We're not that old. 40's not that old. God damn it. I hate hearing myself say that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
I remember my mom telling me that when I was little. And I was like, yeah, right, whatever. You're ancient.
It doesn't feel old when you're living it.
Yeah.
I don't feel what I imagined 40 was.
Right, yeah. Now, I still feel like a 20-something until I hang out with a 20-something, and I'm like, no, I'm 40.
Yeah.
I'm still 39. I got to stop rounding up.
No, and like my fiance is younger than me and was very sheltered growing up, so they don't get any of my references either. So you're not alone.
Yeah, but I try to reference only stuff that's still funny out of context. I mean, if we're having a good time, you're having a good time. That's how comedy works.
Yeah.
deal with it. So you said you loved the dramatic readings. It was your favorite thing. Funny thing about that, it requires the least amount of effort on my part to put that bit together.
Yeah.
I'm literally just reading direct lines from the show.
Just, you know, in funny voices.
Yeah. It's the same two voices every time. It does. I mean, for the same reason I cut the dad bit, doing the angel voice kind of hurts my voice.
But come on, though, honestly, give yourself a little bit of credit. There is a timing thing about it.
Oh, yeah.
That your timing is impeccable.
I suppose I take that for granted.
Yeah.
I'll take that compliment.
I mean, your timing is one of the number one reasons why you are funnier than me.
Yes.
I do not have good comedic timing.
That's an excellent question, Rex. I'm so glad you asked me that.
I didn't ask a question.
And the answer is yes.
But I didn't ask a question.
That is correct. And the answer is yes.
Go fuck yourself.
All right. So then you kind of fangirled out on us. We didn't understand what you said collectively. But then you loved how we say no, which I just want to say, that's not actually how we say no in general. That's just
right.
It's a funny thing.
It's a funny bit. We
it's
have.
An ironic way to be like, well, obviously, but we're saying no.
Yeah. You also mentioned us apparently being PC without being PC.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's our claim to fame.
Specifically in pointing out, calling attention to things that the show does that just in this day and age are not great. Sexist or something along those lines, that sort of thing. But we tend to try to do it in a way where we're calling it out, but we're not like lecturing about it.
Yeah.
Which I would like to say that is completely on purpose. We are very specifically aiming to not do that.
Yeah,
because
we're here to have fun.
There are a few Buffy podcasts that do that. Like you mentioned,
what?
Where they just
no.
they just rail and rail and rail at the podcast
no.
at the show.
That never happens. A Buffy pod cramming shit down your throats. No,
but you know my whole thing on it is like we're doing this podcast because we love the show.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much Angel, but.
Well, nobody can be perfectly PC all the time.
No,
even
definitely
if you're
not.
Even if you're really trying, everyone's always going to have biases, and also PC is constantly in a state of flux.
Exactly, because culture is constantly in the state
yeah.
of flux. Something that is kosher today might not have been kosher a year ago, even.
But we pride ourselves on our ability to grow and learn and recognize past mistakes. And just in general, trying to be better people.
It also just comes down to you and I are both very strongly of the mind that most people should be free to do really kind of whatever they want as long as it doesn't do any harm or hindrance to other people.
As long as you're not infringing on other people's rights.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you want to be weird? Fucking go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, you know, just be kind.
Yeah. Get off your high horse. Nobody wants to listen to that. Well, apparently a lot of people want to listen to that.
Yeah.
But we've heard a few people. We're taking the leftovers. Everybody that's more like us that enjoys being able to make a butt joke every now and again.
Yeah.
And not getting up their own asses about it. Or whatever it is people are getting up their asses about. I don't know.
I don't know what's going on anymore.
Me either. Anyway, yes, next point. We are from Michigan. Also, Doyle's death was very sad, in fact. I didn't really have anything else to say about that.
No.
But you seemed to need to talk about it.
We're at the end of my notes.
All right. You kind of wondered what Cordy would have contributed had she not gotten the visions from Doyle. I think Cordy had plenty to contribute, but I understand how it's hard to imagine her without the visions, especially after today's episode.
Yes.
So good timing.
Yeah.
Completely pure random happenstance, obviously, since you sent this like a couple of months ago.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll be talking about that more in short order. Thank you for binging us. I appreciate that you were the one that recommended the thing about an extended version of the Mr. Trick music. That is also my favorite music clip that we have for the show.
Yes.
Completely, 100% my favorite. And I will, come hell or high water, make an extended version of that, even though the original producer, composer of that music is no longer working for us. But we have new ones that are better, so it's going to be okay. Alrighty? Okay.
Alrighty.
Thank you very much, Monica Fonseca-Taez, for your trip to Mordor with us. I love it. This concludes Fred's messages.
Time for a mom synopsis. Let's get this fucking show on the road.
Joshua, what are you doing, Joshua? Oh, just doing some shopping at the mall, Mom. Not that it's any of your damned business. Oh, I love shopping. What are you shopping for, Joshua? Tell me all about your business that you've specifically set a boundary against just now. Sure. Well, I just needed some supplies to make a pentagram and cast a spell to resurrect Dad. So, of course, I went to Hot Topic. Hot Topic, naturally, yes. You know, Satan, sex, alternative fashion, etc. Yes, yes, that all sounds accurate. You and your necromancy, Joshua. What have I told you about necromancy? Never in the house? That's right. I feel like that's not the first time I've made that joke, specifically in the mom synopsis. Oh, well. So I was doing some necromancy in your basement, specifically because of your no necromancy rule. And I got this vision that I was supposed to have visions that would kill me if I wasn't also at least part demon. Joshua, I don't like where this is going, Joshua. So long story short, can I borrow some money to get horn surgery and my tongue forked? Joshua, that's absurd. No, I won't fund you ruining my body. I think
you mean my body.
Sure, whatever. What about a tail? Would you pay for a tail? Oh my God, Joshua, that actually sounds adorable. How much would that cost?
$42,000.
Get the fuck out of my house! Because today on Angel, Cordy has a vision that nearly kills her, sending her into an astral projection state, and everybody's favorite hell demon, Skip, comes to give her a sporting chance at survival. All she has to do is let the powers that be rewrite history so that she becomes a famous actress instead of Angel's assistant. She goes for it, but she can't shake that nagging feeling that she's supposed to be somewhere else. She tracks down some writing on the wall that logically shouldn't exist because of wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey reasons, and runs into an alternate reality version of Wesley and Gunn, who lead her to Angel, who took the visions from Doyle instead of her. She can't stand the sight of what the visions have done to Angel, and kisses him. Taking the visions back for herself, she demands that Skip make her part demon so she can handle the visions, and he does so at no extra cost to herself, shipping and handling not included. Now she can have visions without pain and only a slight side effect of mild levitation. The end!
Ladies, gentlemen, spiny-headed little creatures,
as soon as the sun goes down, 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 down. As soon as the sun goes down, 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 down. Competition is a beautiful thing.
I have good news for you, by the way, Josh.
Oh?
This episode marks halfway to the end of the series.
Oh, my. It's been a long road.
Yeah.
Getting from there to here. Worst Star Trek opening. Anyway. We cold open. I can't stop burping today.
Yeah, you should fucking quit it.
I'm not gonna. So a cold open
at the Hyperion Hotel. Cordy is giving a speech, kind of covered in grime. Really threw me off, but she's giving a speech to accept a reward. But it turns out her and Fred are scrubbing floors. And
yeah, we were supposed to think, is she actually having a moment?
Right.
Did she get another acting role? What's going on?
Apparently, the speech that she is reciting is one that she had prepared a long time ago for accepting rewards.
An acceptance speech, yeah. Fred's all impressed, but it looks like our boy Harvey is slacking hard on his cleaning duties because the A-team is elbow deep in entrails here.
Yeah. I like the fact that they kind of actually have to clean things up. Like, it's a nice little glimpse into, like, ooh, what happens outside of the episode kind of thing, you know? Like, when they kill a demon and they get goo all over every fucking visible surface, like, what happens with that?
Yeah, okay, so they're cleaning up from the demons they killed, not from the Wolfram and Hart people that were in there dead. So, never mind.
No, that too.
I take it back. I think Harvey did do his job.
Well, because in the beginning of the last episode, when they got back, there was still blood places. And there was still, you know, signs of murder all over the place.
That's true. That's true. All right. You're back in the hot seat, Harvey. You're a piece of shit. You're bad at your job.
Yeah. You're supposed to erase all existence.
Yeah. Like, a fucking forensics team is supposed to be able to come in there and not figure out anything that happened,
right,
or went wrong, or that anybody's even dead.
Like one of those crime scene cleanups that you have to hire after, like, a horrendous thing happens in your house.
Yeah, exactly. Like Dexter fucking down there scrubbing with a toothbrush and some special fucking cleaner that gets rid of the blood even under UV rays.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Gunn steps in wearing a mask, being all faux bossy, but really being jealous of their cleaning assignment because he's literally scraping up entrails.
Yeah.
I mean, supposedly. I didn't see any entrails. I think it's all a ruse.
Yeah, I think he's lying.
Yeah.
He's actually sitting in back playing video games.
Trying to make them feel better and do his work for him.
Yeah.
It's the entrails gambit.
Then enters Angel and Connor. Connor just woke up from a nap.
Wesley's out shopping for more cleaner.
Yep. Cordy immediately jumps to her feet, rushes over to hold the baby, and Angel's not having it. Gives me one of my quotes of the day. Angel's, whoa, dirty people, not touching the baby. She replies with, but pig drinking bloodsuckers are okay?
Eh.
I meant that in a nice way.
In a nice way, yeah.
But no, she's like, okay, fine, I'll go wash my hands.
I mean,
yeah, you should before holding the baby.
Nah, it's good for his immune system.
I mean, the cleaners are really the problem.
Yeah, that shit will give you cancer.
Yeah.
Entrails, though, smear that shit all over you. Zombies won't even see you.
Right.
You're good to go. So, yeah, she goes to wash her hands. Wesley enters immediately, intensely asking, where is she? And Cordy pops some pills in the bathroom, washes her hands, assuming, and is pleasantly surprised upon return by a birthday cake. And the worst song in the world.
The worst song in the world, yes. But I have fun facts for you, Josh.
Hmm.
This aired in 2003.
Oh, was it still owned by...
It was still owned by Time Warner. And so they had to have paid a pretty penny to be able to sing it on the air.
Wasn't it owned by Michael Jackson for a while?
No, I think you're thinking of Beatles music.
I could have sworn Michael Jackson owned Happy Birthday, but...
I don't think so.
All right, whatever.
But anyway, no, Time Warner owned it. And the lawsuit that cleared all this shit up happened in 2013, settled in 2016. Time Warner had to pay $14 million in damages because of the many years that they had a huge stick up their ass about the Happy Birthday song. And turns out, oh, they didn't actually own the copyright.
Oh,
because the music of the copyright is based on another song, and that song was in the public domain. So the music that the Happy Birthday lyrics were written to is in the public domain, and the person who wrote the lyrics to Happy Birthday had no actual affiliation with Time Warner. They just, through some publication, had produced the song, and then they assumed when they published that had the song in it, that they had the copyright.
Hmm.
So it was a complete bullshit thing, and years and years and years of them charging out the ass for people to sing Happy Birthday in TV shows and shit.
Wow, what a fucking scam.
That's why all, especially through the 90s, you only ever saw TV shows doing, like, Jolly Good Fellow. Shit like
yeah,
that.
That's funny. Oh, that's what they did in What About Bob?
Yep.
Huh. Well, fuck Time Warner, right in the face. Yeah, fascinating. What a clusterfuck, though. So yeah, worst song in the world. She's having a great time at a birthday party with some light baby holding, some presents, and a deathly vision of hell.
Another moment here, though, she finds herself in a dilemma between wanting to hold the baby and open her presence.
Mm-hmm.
She has a moment where she turns to Angel. She's like, take the baby. And Angel's so put off. He's like, you're choosing birthday presents over my kid?
Duh. Yes.
And then she's like, no, take the baby. Take the baby, as she starts to get a vision.
Yeah, we haven't had a vision bit in like several episodes.
Yeah, it's been a while.
You should be expecting it, Angel.
Yeah.
And opening sequence. But no, the vision's so fucking bad. It knocks her backwards.
Yeah.
And breaks some fucking glass.
Yeah, it breaks the glass of the weapons cabinet.
Was that what it was? Okay. Yeah, and it's fucked up. And there's some sort of demon. We learn more about the demon
later. More importantly, it throws her back so hard, it knocks her out of her own fucking body.
Yeah, out of body experience time.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a vision. So, yeah, opening sequence. Meow, 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 meow. Cordy's all out of body now. Astral projecting and shit.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of creepy whispering and seeing shadows randomly around the room. She's freaking out that they can't hear her. The A-team can't hear her. And they're freaking out over her unconscious body.
Yeah, you know, like you would be.
They do this bit where she wakes up and she's like, oh, thank God. But then looks over and sees her body with everybody huddled around it.
It's a classic thing.
It is.
It's classic. I like it.
Very Ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually a little Beetlejuice, too. I'm sure there's tons of shows that have done it. They're freaking out. She's still breathing, though. That's the important thing.
She's still breathing. She's alive.
Body is still technically alive.
She's in some sort of coma, apparently.
Yeah, and they find her pills. I think they were in her pocket or in the bathroom.
She dropped them.
Dropped them on the ground.
She had them in her hand or they were in her pocket and they fell on the floor.
Okay. They find her pills and they're like, what the fuck is this? We didn't know anything about this.
Also, I would like to point out and also ask a question. Wesley pronounces it migraine, not migraine.
Oh, well, he's British.
And it makes me wonder if are migraine headaches pronounced migraine headaches in Britain?
Apparently.
I would like to know, is it a British thing or is it a Wesley thing?
All right, Alexis Denisov, if you could give us a call at 269-743-0783.
Or really anyone from England.
Anybody at all.
Anyone from England, if you want to let us know.
That'd be great.
I just want to know if I should judge him for this.
Probably. What, do you think he's putting on extra Britishisms just to placate the showrunners? I suppose it's entirely
possible.
That's
very possible.
I don't see why he would make that up, but okay. So
it just really threw me off.
Lorne pops in, and I fucking loved his exclamation. Thank you. I loved his exclamation here. He's like, jumping Judas on a unicycle. What the hell happened? And when I was trying to remember it while I was writing it down, I wrote Moses on a motorcycle. And then I tried to find it in my transcript. I tried to find it in the transcript by searching for it. And I was like typing in motorcycle. And I'm like, bullshit. He totally said motorcycle. I found it eventually. And it was like, no, he said unicycle. Well, fuck my brain. I need to get these brain scans that they gave Cordy.
Right.
It's going to be all green. Fucking brain dead.
It's not that bad.
Yeah. We'll see. So, but no, he's like, jumping Judas on a unicycle. What the hell happened?
Also, Gunn suggests taking him to the hospital, and I love how Angel reminds everyone, hey, guys, we live in the U.S., and, you know, U.S. healthcare, they're not going to help.
They're not going to do anything. A hospital? Come on, guys. This is obviously mystical. You know, something we can handle.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yeah, you know, you're probably right.
Well, and Lorne specifically says that he's picking up a lot of woo-woo vibes, so it's definitely mystical, not
there
medical.
You go. That's all we needed to hear.
Yeah.
Woo-woo, fucking crazy voodoo, Satan, whatever. That's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
So he can't sense Cordy's presence, though, even though she's literally yelling in his face.
Yeah.
But he can sense that there's some shit going on. So that's the start.
Can I just say, I love how Charisma Carpenter is playing this through this whole scene, because Cordy is just offended that nobody can see her.
Right.
Like, it's not so much that she's upset that nobody can see her. It's that she's offended that nobody can see her. And then later she's upset that she can't tell them what the vision was.
Yeah. But she also gets upset that they're, like, looking into her private shit.
Right,
that she's
too.
Been hiding from them, which has clearly come to a head and is about to take her life.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think you need to right? you need to let him have this one.
Yeah.
You need to get over it, because you're literally about to die because of your stubbornness.
And so Angel sends Fred and Gunn to go to Cordy's place, and immediately Ethereal Cordy is yelling, "No, bad idea, don't go to my apartment."
Sure.
And, you know, because there's a bunch of evidence of that she has been hiding.
Yeah, I don't think we really need to specify. I think from here on forward, we can just say Cordy, and we'll assume it's the conscious one.
Yeah.
Cordy's consciousness.
So Cordy was just laying there.
And she jumped up and said, no, I think, well, we'll tell you when she jumps up. It's the end of the episode.
Spoiler alert. Fair point.
cut to Cordelia's apartment.
I don't want to share my feelings. I don't want to open up. I want to find the guy that killed Tina, and I want to look him in the eye.
Then what?
Then I'm going to share my feelings.
Where we were just talking about Dennis last episode.
Yeah.
And now here he is wearing a birthday hat. And this might actually be the most endearing thing that I think Dennis has ever done.
Right. Because he obviously was planning to surprise Cordy with a birthday celebration. There's a banner and confetti. He's wearing a hat. And, you know.
Which is impressive for a ghost to be able to pull all that shit together.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously a very hands-on ghost.
Yeah.
Giggity.
Makes me wonder what kind of relationship Cordy and Dennis have.
Right. Yeah. Or we're just perverts.
I mean, we are.
That's, I think, really the point here. We're so PC. Look at us. Jeez. Oh, my God. So Fred is characteristically cordial to this ghost.
Yeah.
And she's never met this ghost before. And Gunn just absolutely gushes over her for it.
I love her play on the word former.
Oh, yeah.
How do I, because she's talking about, like, formally introducing herself to somebody who's former.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cute.
That is a play on words, kind of. Yeah.
I love Fred. She's adorable.
She is.
It's fucking adorable.
Gunn would agree with you.
Yeah.
And But the trail, unfortunately, seems to be a dead end, no pun intended. Because they're looking through her underwear drawer, they're looking through her medicine cabinet, they don't find anything unusual. Fucking Gunn's walking around carrying one of her bras, and Fred's excuse you.
Like, okay. Gunn, you're fine for looking in the underwear drawer. Like, that's...
But just twirling her bra around on your finger?
Carrying around the underwear? Why are you taking underwear out of her drawer?
Not necessary.
Yeah.
That, I mean, for storytelling purposes, visual aid that you've been in the underwear drawer,
yeah,
sure. But beyond that, it makes no sense.
Right.
And it makes him kind of a creep.
But, yeah, they can't find anything. And Fred points out that it's actually the lack of anything that is suspicious, because the Celtrex, the prescription that Cordy is on, is some pretty hardcore medicine, which, by the way, not a real medicine. I looked it up.
Okay.
Not a real medicine.
I was like, good to know there's good meds out there for migraines.
No, not a real medicine.
Damn. That being said, lack of evidence is not evidence. But...
Well... Because she points out that Celtrex is a very hardcore medicine, and in order to get that medicine, she would have probably had to have a long-standing treatment plan of trying other medicines,
yeah.
And none of that is in evidence. And more importantly, there's not even something like Advil in evidence.
Right.
And it's like, the fact that she's having these kind of migraines with this kind of hardcore prescription med, and there's no other painkillers in the apartment, that's a big red flag. And Fred's smart enough to pick it up.
I mean, what if she's just really good about getting rid of her old meds when she's done with them? She'd still have Advil.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, ibuprofen.
Yeah.
Or as Wanda Sykes pronounces it, ibuprofen.
But no, at this moment, they start talking to Dennis, and they're like, look, we want to help Cordy. We're really worried about her. She's in danger here. I know you're trying to help by hiding this, but you need to trust us.
Yeah, hey, Ghost, cough up the goods. And he said...
And he does. He moves a bin out from under Cordy's bed. And I'm just saying, Gunn, why didn't you look there?
Look under the bed, maybe.
And Fred even points out, really? You looked in the underwear drawer first?
Yep.
But yeah.
I thought that she was saying, oh, Dennis must have looked in the underwear drawer first and collected all of her shit and put it under the bed.
She's calling Gunn out.
That is a distinct possibility and likelihood, yes. Okay.
So, yeah, the meds are showing a history of this.
Oh, yeah.
Prescriptions filled over a year ago.
And was it also full of, like, paperwork?
Yes.
Okay.
Paperwork, CAT scan results, all sorts of shit like that.
Well, how handy is that? That it was all neatly in one little place.
Well,
it's very organized.
I think the only reason it was in one little place was Dennis hid it all.
Or Cordy was keeping a tidy little hiding place.
Also possible.
I think both are equally possible. Cut to the Hyperion. I believe it is Angel's bedroom.
Yep, Angel's suite where he's talking to Cordy's limp unconscious body.
I didn't think that you meant suite as in a room. I was like, Angel's suite what, Rex?
His suite.
Go on. It's a pretty sweet suite.
Yeah, it's a swanky sweet suite.
Sweet sweet. So he sits there cursing Cordelia.
Well, and he's expressing how upset he is that she hid this.
It's coming from a place of caring, but it is a little counterintuitive considering the circumstances. But it works for him.
Yeah.
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 Fuck you, Cordy. Cordy stands back listening. And she's all like, oh my God, I'm in so much distress right now. How can you be upset at me? And Lorne walks in and he's like, well, time to fire up the old Vulcan voodoo. I'm a mite bit rusty. Her brain might explode, but there's already entrails everywhere, so no better time than the present.
And the last time he did this, he got thrown across the room, as he points out. You know what? Kudos on Lorne, because like the last time he did this, he got thrown across the room and he's still gung-ho to do it.
Oh, yeah.
That man cares. He's got
loves
a big heart.
That girl.
Yeah. And I'm so happy that he's a full like cast member in the crew and everything.
Yeah, I can't wait for them to stop treating him like shit.
Yeah.
That'll be a nice day.
It'll be a great day.
So anyway, it doesn't work. And Angel goes all aggro and crawls right up inside Lauren's petite, minuscule little butthole. And he's like, listen, bitch, you're going to go call the powers that be, or I'm going to start throwing Snickers wrappers up in this big old brown business of yours. And Lauren's like, well, that's kind of a big ask. I don't know if I really can. Gosh, geez, peace. And Angel's like, well, I'm not asking.
Dun, dun, dun.
So Lauren's like, well, you know, I'm not paying rent. You did kind of blow up my business like 8 times, but sure, I'll take this verbal abuse. You know, I'm used to it. And he just saunters off defeated. Yeah. So glad he's part of the team now. He's doing a good job.
I mean,
you're a good man, Lauren.
They're getting there.
You're getting there.
Yeah.
They've been very demanding of him.
They really have. They really have.
He even stopped into his own fucking place. And he's like, kind of busy.
Right.
And they're like, not anymore. Because you owe us, except for that part where he doesn't owe them shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Complicated relationship there,
I think. Yeah.
We have a little bit of a time jump here as Angel has fallen asleep at Cordy's bedside. And then we kind of skipped over it. There was another part earlier where Wesley was reading up on astral projection and stuff. And Cordy was reading over his shoulder.
I did totally miss that.
It was very brief. But apparently during that reading over his shoulder, she got the idea that once Angel is asleep, she can possess his body.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder, why can't she possess her own body?
Yeah.
I was like, how come at this point, why hasn't she tried to just get into her own body?
Yeah. I wish she would have at least tried that and it rejected her real quick.
Right.
I'm fully on board with the idea that her brain is fucked right now. And that's why her body's rejecting her in the first place. But it seems like if her brain's so fucked, then how would it have the power to astral project her? Seems like you would need an extra healthy brain and powerful brain to do that.
Well, It's not explicitly said by any means. My impression is that the entire reason that she's outside of her body is Skip made that happen when he comes into the picture. I think she's having an out-of-body experience because he wants to help her.
I don't necessarily think it's because he wants to help her, unless there's a line that I missed that's alludes to that. I get the impression that the powers that be and Skip definitely want to help her, but this is just kind of a symptom of being close to death.
We'll get there.
Okay.
I have notes on it. We'll get there. As it is now, she actually possesses Angel, has him start to write out the address from her vision on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it works, kind of, but then something knocks her out of Angel's body.
Yeah, some sort of black wisp
yeah.
that we've noticed a couple of times before, but now it's taking a more prominent forefront. Yeah.
And the whispering's getting louder.
The whispering's getting worse. I don't know if we mentioned the whispering before, but there's been a lot of creepy whispering. Wesley comes in, finding Angel on the floor. He thinks...
First, Cordy yells at the whispering, "You can't scare me," and then Wesley enters the room and it makes her jump.
Yeah.
And it's a good joke.
Nice little Buffyverse yeah. flip there. "You can't scare me," instantly gets scared. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Wesley comes in finding Angel on the floor. He thinks he had a dream about Cordy trying to tell him something. It's like, close, very close.
Yeah, you're right in the neighborhood.
But Wesley brings news of Cordy's CAT scans, which shows widespread neurological deterioration, which even Angel can tell you means she's dying.
Yeah, and it ain't good.
Everyone gets pretty hopeless and defeated for a minute. Wesley tells Angel to fuck off while he watches Cordy and Connor for a bit. Go get, fuck off in a good way. Go get some sleep.
Wesley tells Angel to take a break.
Yeah.
And, all I can wonder is, where does he go? This is his room. It's his bed, for fuck's sake.
It's a hotel. He's probably got a coffin somewhere that he sleeps in.
No, he sleeps in a bed.
He might have a coffin.
We've discussed this. He does not have a coffin.
He might, though.
He doesn't.
As a joke.
Maybe.
For Halloween.
Maybe.
Maybe put some pillows in there. I don't know. Maybe there's a couch.
Anyway.
He's in a hotel he owns.
He does fuck off.
He found somewhere to sleep. It's fine. Or he didn't go sleep at all because he's Angel and he broods.
Oh, yeah.
And he stays up for days at a time and then sleeps for days at a time.
Anyway, the whispering starts to get louder and Cordy gets more uneasy. And then suddenly Skip shows up. Hi, Skip.
Yeah, the black wisp materializes into our boy Skip. Woot woot. Fucking love Skip.
I love Skip.
Commercial break. Great bit here. Cordy asks the obligatory, "Oh my God, are you Death?" And he laughs maniacally. And I'm like, oh, come on, you're a nicer dude than that, Skip. And then he immediately drops the act and he's like, I'm just kidding. I'm Skip. And he goes to shake her hand and she doesn't shake his hand.
My favorite bit in this conversation is he looks at her and he goes, oh, you have a really good self-esteem, don't you?
Right, because he explains that when most people astral project, they have an idealized form of themselves where they fix things that they don't like.
Yeah.
Drop a few pounds, fix the nose,
yeah.
get the gray hairs out.
But she just looks like herself.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, Cordy's got self-esteem for miles.
Also, have you noticed she's fucking hot? She doesn't need to fix anything.
Right.
But the important thing is she also doesn't feel like she needs to fix anything.
Right.
Because attractive people all the time think that they're ugly.
Yes.
So it's a good point regardless.
No, she is very confident, has good self-esteem. I like it. I like that they mention that.
Yeah.
Helps kind of solidify that aspect of the character in some ways, I think.
Of Skip?
No, of Cordy.
Oh, of Cordy, yes. Yeah, very good character building for Cordy.
But yeah.
No attention for Skip whatsoever.
So this
Stop ignoring Skip, Rex.
Anyway, this is when Skip tells her that she needs to go with him, otherwise she will die soon. And
so you're saying he said,
yes,
come with me if you want to live.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
Except I don't think she's really getting the whole if you want to live part.
Right. Well, and she's still a little confused. She doesn't know who Skip is.
She's never met Skip before.
We have met Skip.
He never mentions that he was there when Angel got the dude out of hell.
Right.
That sounds like a song title.
Yeah.
Get the dude out of hell.
Yeah, that's totally a song.
Sounds like a Meatloaf album.
You're right, it does.
But that's because he has an album that's literally named Bad Out of Hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Downstairs to the lobby in the front desk where Fred is explaining the scan results and essentially how these scans show normal brain and the progression of the scans. Cordy's basically slowly, her brain is dying.
Yeah. Here's a healthy brain. It's nice and pink and red. Here's a non-healthy brain. It's fucking green, mostly. This is Cordy's brain, the green one. This is a month ago. And it's like, ooh, that's not good.
Right. And the scan is basically showing activity. Red means lots of activity. Green is not so much.
Well, they specifically said the doctors are baffled because this green means that she should be a fucking vegetable.
Yeah.
There's like, how the fuck is...
And hey, guess what? She is now.
How the fuck is she... Was she conscious for that month leading up to now, right, though? Is the crazy part. Whatever. We never really get an explanation.
Yeah. And everyone is super angry at themselves for not noticing things. They're angry at Cordy for hiding things. It's
a clusterfuck.
Everyone's upset.
It's very dramatic. Very dramatic.
Yeah.
Lauren pops in quite worse for wear. His coat sleeve torn and a fucking horn falling off.
Yep.
It's taped up later. He literally can't talk about what happened because they cast a spell on him, making him unable to talk about it.
Yeah.
But he's able to write it, so he gives Angel a note. And the fucking psychopath... Angel has little to no regard for Lauren's sacrifice, and it's to the point that Lauren feels more like a fucking comedic relief jester at this point,
right,
than an actual member of the team yet. Lauren at least briefly calls him out on this with a nice sarcastic jab at him. He says, "Oh, why yes, Angel, my horn should grow back in a couple of days. So kind of you to be concerned." And then he's like, yeah. "Well, they didn't say I couldn't write it." Gives him the note. Don't know why. He should have fucking held it fucking ransom at that point. But it's for Cordy. It's for Cordy. Right.
And Lauren does warn Angel that it will be very dangerous. This is something that only a true champion can manage. It's like, it's fucking Angel. What do you expect?
Right. And I think it's funny that he's like, you know, only a champion can do this. He's called him a champion in previous episodes.
Yeah.
But that feels like a sideways jab at the moment because he's not acting like a champion. He's acting like a dick.
No, he isn't. He is not.
But only a champion can deal with the conduit. And Angel runs off like a dick.
Like a dick.
Cut to...
He's got some... pudding to jump into.
Whole dick in. Just get yourself a kiddie pool full of pudding. Stick that dick right in it.
I don't see Angel putting on tights. Oh, now I do, and it's really disturbing. Protecting young women such as yourself? Oh, yeah, there's been four. And three of them are very much alive.
Hey, let's go to the mall!
To the mall! The powers that be and Skip apparently think rather little of Cordelia, or the producers needed a cheap and spacious filming location.
Yes.
Either way, mall.
I think this was meant to be a very cheap episode.
And you know what? I don't mind this episode. I'm not upset about this episode. So if they can make better episodes with a lower budget... fine.
Exactly. Like I don't care about the lack of special effects or anything like that. I just like, if you're going to have a cheap episode, that means you have to step up on the writing and the characterization and all that.
Yeah. Or you should be paying your writers more, and that's where the extra money goes. Or we just take advantage of the writers. I think that's the American way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Capitalism.
Capitalism and capital. Yes. So, they're in the mall. Skip explains that it's like the Matrix. It's not really a mall. It's more of a construct of a mall.
Right.
And he goes all fanboy about the movie The Matrix. And it's really awkward. And they do that Buffyverse thing where they mix up pop culture vapidity with juxtaposed dark seriousness, which normally is fine. Like, Joss Whedon and the Buffyverse invented that shit. And everyone that's tried it since... generally fails horribly at it, and it just feels like fan service nonsense. But this is it's starting to feel a little tired.
Yeah. Well, and they haven't really given us enough of Skip to like have it settle in. Oh, he actually knows pop culture.
But that's also kind of Skip's, the whole thing about Skip is that he's the nicest, most ferocious looking hell demon, who's still the nicest damn guy that you've ever damn met. And that's his shtick. It makes sense that he, you know, just, he's got an eternity to sit there in hell guarding people. Why wouldn't he watch movies?
Right. God, that's way too much free time.
That is way, well, it's not really free time.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. It's,
I mean, I've been a security guard. It's fucking free time. Yeah,
being a permanent, eternal security guard, that sounds terrible. Well, they had shifts, though. He's on shifts.
Yeah.
He's got free time. Real free time.
Anyway.
This is probably what he does with it.
He recaps her getting the visions and explains how it's a complete mistake. It shouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. The only reason that it did happen was that Doyle was completely in love with her. And love, being an act of pure free will, apparently trumps anything the powers that be can throw at the problem.
Ha-ha.
And the
fucking, you know, Doyle.
You hurt the ones you love?
Yeah, I guess. Fucking everything up, Doyle. How many seasons later? At least two.
Yeah.
Then
we get to meet Head Wound Tammy.
Massive Head Wound Tammy. Yeah. Because he's talking about how only demons are strong enough to have visions. He's like, just ask old timey Tammy here, who also had visions back in 1620 or something. And they eventually blew out the back of her skull. And she's like, it's true, I did. And then he's like, all right, now get out of here. You bother me. And no, really, fucking leave.
Yeah.
I got work to do. And she's like, ah, okay. And then Cordy takes a little brain vacation, which is kind of ironic, considering she's already on a little brain vacation.
She's, in fact, this whole the whole episode is a brain vacation.
She has a bit of a nested brain vacation here, which I originally thought that this, her checking out, was her having a vision of where we go next, Angel in the cavern talking to the conduit. But that is not what happened. No. That was just a poor cut.
It wasn't great.
It was bad editing.
Yeah, we cut to the conduit. Some underground location. Angel falls into the scene, argues with some disembodied voices.
He's trying to big dick boy his way through the fucking powers that be. It's like, do you think that's gonna work, buddy?
Right? They're literally divine beings.
Yeah.
They throw him around a bit. That's the end of that scene.
They do. They're like, ha ha ha, he is but a rag doll. Get rid of him. No, let me toy with him first. Oh, now get rid of him.
Okay.
They keep chanting shit like, the powers owe nothing, send it away. Angel's like, oh, hell no, you have not seen how big my dick is yet. Get the pudding.
Yes.
Get the pudding, Rex. Get the pudding.
You know,
get the pudding, Rex.
Pudding sounded so good, and then we started talking about pudding dicks and
the pudding.
I don't have any pudding.
All right.
I'll make some later.
What am I even doing here?
Does your dick prefer chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Sometimes tapioca.
Too chunky.
I know. That's the joke. Nobody likes tapioca. Pretty sure they've had the same tub of tapioca pudding at the fucking Chinese buffet for like, could be the same shit that's been there for 12 years. I would never know.
You're not going to eat it. No, you find out it's actually just fake. Yeah. Like, there's no actual pudding in it. Mm-hmm. They just put it there.
Or we find out that tapioca pudding in general is just, it's just gel. It's like hair gel.
Ugh.
Yeah. It's kind of what it tastes like.
Anyway, we cut back to the mall.
Duh, mall.
Now, okay, I want to talk about this briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's my thought. The whole conversation that Skip and Cordy are having, basically, Skip is explaining to Cordy that she wasn't supposed to get the visions. She's going to die if she keeps the visions. I honestly think that, because he points out, if you don't take the deal I'm offering you, you will go back to your body, be trapped there until you have another vision, and that kills you.
Mm-hmm.
Which that right there is what tells me that Skip is the entire reason that she's currently outside of her body. I think that without Skip, what would have happened is she would have gone into a coma, stayed there trapped in her body, and then died at the next vision, like he says that she will if she doesn't take the deal he's offering.
Okay, but I don't feel like Skip is necessarily a free agent in this. I feel
okay,
like
okay, so the powers that be are giving her the out of body experience, and you know, But the point is I think that the out of body experience is unquestionably not part of what's wrong with her. The coma is medical.
All right, I think that's a fair argument. I can get on board with that. But Skip's like, so did you ever feel like you're supposed to call somebody back, but you don't know who? And what about your acting career that you've never had? And look at this party that you were, I think it was from the pilot episode when she runs into Angel and he recruits her. What if you'd run into this guy instead of Angel? You'd be incredibly wealthy and famous. How would you like that? And Cordy, being the incredibly big bald bitch that she's become, is now more concerned with the fact that Angel wouldn't know how to save people if she didn't have visions.
Yeah.
Which is patently false. He'd do just fine. But like we were saying earlier with Monica, it's difficult to imagine what would have done without Cordy.
Well, and the simple fact is the visions are a very effective way for him to save people. Without having somebody in his group with the visions, it's kind of a question like, okay, they just have to, all they have to do then is wait for people to come to them who want saving.
Yeah, I would say it cuts out maybe a quarter or a third of what they do, but they still find plenty of cases on their own have people come to them. Yeah, that's what you were saying, I thought. So I feel like we're on the same page here.
Yeah. But yeah, and then this is where Skip explains that if she returns to her body, she'll be locked in until the next vision kills her. Which, by the way, being locked in your own body is fucking terrifying to me.
Yeah.
The concept of that.
Sounds like hell. By the way, yeah, we need to go to a lawyer and I need to give you power of attorney medically over me or something, because I don't want it to be my mother anymore.
Oh, fair.
And reference this episode if it ever comes to it. Like, this is vocal recorded evidence.
Yes.
All right. Cool. So, yeah, Skip's like, okay, listen, because she doesn't want to take his offer right away. He's like, come with me. They step through a wall into the cavern where Angel's arguing with the conduit.
Yeah.
And with comedically shitty timing, she only hears the part where Angel's calling her a weak, rich valley girl, ironically.
Yeah.
Thank you, Monica, who can't hack it. And she tells Skip immediately to get her the fuck out of here, which is, of course, exactly the moment that Angel starts saying nice things.
Yeah, he says, I am more afraid of her dying than she is.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that's heavy.
Yeah. He needs her emotionally, and it's not just, oh, I need her for work or to save other people. He's a fucking attached to her, like, you know, like they're best friends.
Yeah,
and they are.
His whole angle here is that she was just a nice, normal girl, and then she got wrapped up with me and all this bullshit, but she's turned into this warrior woman.
Yeah.
And now she's a badass.
She's had a hell of a character arc.
Yeah.
But it's too late. Cordy's made her choice, and it's time to be a rich actress. Why the fuck not? And she's suddenly standing in front of an adoring audience, and we get a really stupid rom-com sitcom opening sequence.
Fun fact, the singer who's singing the Cordy sitcom theme song is the same person, the woman who did the parking ticket song in Once More with Feeling.
Oh, isn't that one of the producers or something?
Yep.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yep.
She's got a good voice.
She does.
Definitely. So Cordelia walks backstage after the opening sequence thing, and her agent / manager, whatever the hell he is, this dude.
He's an assistant.
Okay.
He's an assistant.
He walks along beside her, trying to fulfill her every need, and she stops to sign some autographs, but then she's like, I feel like I'm forgetting something.
Yeah.
Well,
like that nagging feeling that Skip mentioned, she's having a nagging feeling like she's forgetting something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, I'm meant for more grander things than just being an actress.
Yeah, and apparently this powers that be magic is obviously not very good, because it only takes her 3 fucking tries to remember something very relevant to what is now not even a past life. It's a fork of a different timeline. But
I was actually trying to figure out like the idea of how this is working, and my best guess is it's not that they altered history, It's that they just kind of wrote over, recorded over.
And that's exactly how Skip explained it, which kind of explains why when she gets to the hotel, she's able to find the writing that only happened moments ago from our perspective, really.
Because, she remembers the Hyperion Hotel, basically just walks right out, her assistant's like, oh, I'll help.
But it seems like it'd be easier to change one little moment in history that they can see a domino effect than to had cast a blanket spell over all of the dominoes / people that moment would have affected, which is apparently what they had to do.
Here's my guess. This is based on another book that I read a while back, and I wish I could fucking remember the name of it. But the theory of the way time worked in that book was that as time moves forward, the further back time the past gets, the more set it gets. Mm-hmm. So in this book, you could only affect a very limited amount of time in the past. And so you have a window of now and then like a certain amount of time backwards. If you want to go further back, you can't. Or if you go further back, you can't affect it because it's too set. And that's the kind of idea I have with what's going on here. The stuff that happened back then, they could only do so much to that time frame. So maybe this was the easiest way to do it. Who knows?
Well, I don't know. Feels like bullshit to me.
Yeah.
A person needs certain designer things. You shouldn't be trying to eat my friend's brains. You're a vampire.
So it only takes her 3 tries to remember Hyperion Hotel and first guessing very closely hypothermia and hyperbaric, each thing of which her manager has a standby immediately, a tub of ice and an oxygen tent. I'm like, man, this guy's good.
He is. He's on top of it.
He is not getting paid enough.
No.
we need a tub of ice stat. Actually, no. Cancel that tub of ice.
Also, who is he talking to?
I like to think that the person on the other end of the phone already had the tub of ice in that amount of time. And they're very disappointed.
What am I going to do with this tub of ice?
Either that or he's great at doing his job just by faking these phone calls.
Right.
Like this, that's how you keep people happy. I learned working at the only professional theater I've ever worked at. I'm like, okay, that's a lie. I've worked at several professional theaters now that I think of it. And it's explicitly those terms. But the only equity house I've ever worked in, I learned while I was assistant stage managing one time that the quickest way to shut people up and get them to walk away from me while they're after bringing concerns to me was for me to have a pad of paper with me, write it down as I nod my head and say, great. Because if you just stand there and say, okay, I'll take care of that, they'll just keep talking.
Right.
And they won't go away because they don't believe you.
Yeah. The moment you start doing anything that looks like you're doing what they want, they fuck off.
As soon as you write it down, it's kind of the same as, you know, I hate it when I order food at a restaurant and they're like, I'm not going to write it down. Why bother writing it down?
That always worries me.
Yeah.
It always worries me. It's like, I get it if you can do it, but also pretend to write it down.
Maybe.
You don't actually have to write it down.
Depends on the context. Yeah. But anyway, ice in an oxygen tent. As soon as she says Hyperion, he's got a car for her waiting outside.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the Hyperion.
Which is still in business, which, weird. Mm-hmm. So the spell goes all the way the fuck back to the 1950s?
I don't know. So if Angel doesn't buy the hotel, because the A-team doesn't form as it did before, somebody else could have bought the hotel and spruced it back up in the last few years.
And maybe found the money.
There was also a bag of money in the basement of the hotel. Yeah. So, you know, it's...
Maybe.
It's the butterfly effect.
Either way, her assistant got her a room at the hotel. It's the fanciest suite they have. The guy at the front desk takes her up. First, he gushes over her, has a few Freudian slips.
This fucking guy. So yeah, that's the
it's front, like, okay, we get it. She's fucking famous.
We get it. You want to fuck her too. So he's nervously like, I'll take you up to my room immediately. I mean, your room. Okay. Like, come on, man. Keep yourself right. together. You and everybody else. All right.
But they go up to Cordy's room, and she's like, you know, I don't want this room. I think maybe she's just picking up on, this guy's skeevy. I don't want a room that he's prepared for me.
Yeah, like, you don't, maybe the pillows are poisoned, and he's going to sneak in like, later. He's got a key.
Maybe it's filled with gas, knockout gas, and yeah. I'm going to find myself duct taped to a table.
Yeah, I don't think he was that skeevy, but no, that's a fun take on it, though. But she's like, you there, poor little man. Open this door for me instead.
I want this room.
But madam, a woman of your stature and nobility, why, it's inappropriate to the highest order of degrees. You shouldn't even be looking at such a poor man's room. And she's like, fucking open it. Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
And she walks in, has some backflashes, and it's apparently Angel's old room.
Yes.
Or current room, however you want to look at it.
Yeah. It's Angel's suite, and she walks over to the wall where, as possessing Angel, she wrote on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks about the wallpaper, and the attendant dude is like, oh, yeah, it's by such and such famous person. It's one of a kind. And then she starts tearing it off. She's like, and I hated it.
Yes, it's terrible wallpaper. I hate it, too, which is pathetic. Like, yeah. Have some dignity, dude. What a dick.
Right. But yeah, she tears at the wallpaper and discovers the address written on the wall that she had written. And this is the moment where it's like, okay,
mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but it's 171 Oak.
This is plot hole emporium as level bullshittery.
I don't know what you're talking about. Some fangirl is like, oh my God, you're Cordelia. She's knocking on 171 Oak Street.
Yes.
And Cordy's like, yeah, no shit, kid. Let me in. How you doing?
You know, this also brings up a question. Like, certain level of famous people literally could just walk up to any house, knock on the door, and then walk in.
Pretty much.
It's kind of like the whole Bill Murray thing. Yeah. No one will believe you.
No one will believe you. I think we've mentioned this before, but there's a story going around. I don't know how true it is, but it's probably true if you know anything about Bill Murray.
Yeah.
As a person.
Yeah.
Supposedly he walked into a Wendy's, grabbed a fry off of somebody's plate, looked them in the eye as he ate it, and said, no one will ever believe you. Which is simultaneously a huge dick move and also fucking hilarious.
Right.
I love it.
Like, I think I would love that moment if that happened to me. And it wouldn't even bother me if no one believed me. I would just tell everyone I knew.
Wouldn't it be funny if they didn't know who he was, though?
Right.
Like, huh, you're not as hot as shit as you thought you were, asshole.
Right.
What? I just thought I was kicking some old man's ass. Some old fucking codger steals my fucking fries. That's why you don't do that, Bill Murray.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
No, so she gets invited into this girl's house. Fun fact, they're in Reseda, which is the same place the Karate Kid took place.
Oh, I thought it sounded familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in Reseda, goes into the house. Cordy asks if everything is okay, everyone's safe. The girl's like, yeah, everything's fine. I'm here alone. Nothing's weird going on.
No big deal. Oh, but your dad's dead and your mom's off doing drugs and hooking? Well, that sucks.
Yeah. And then the girl's like, hey, you want to see something cool? And brings Cordy inside to see a summoning circle.
Oh, well, it's a fucking pentagram. Look at that.
She explains that it's a retrieval spell to make her dad come back to live with them. So I don't know if he was actually dead or not, or just took off. I don't know.
Huh.
But she explains that...
I thought she said he was dead. Whatever.
Either way, she explains that she set it up and everything, but she did accidentally spill something on the pages, so she kind of had to guess the last bit.
I think it was Pepsi.
Yeah. Like,
of all beverages.
But she thinks she got it right, and then suddenly the summoning circle itself, all on its own, summons a demon.
Yeah, I think we should go before that happens,
yeah.
And it's the three-mouthed, no-eyed demon spoken of earlier in the episode. And she's like, well, shit. And then Great timing as always. Wesley and Gunn run in looking for a little, looking a little worse for wear.
Yeah.
And fight the three-mouthed, no-eyed demon. Cordelia, having known Wesley well before the point in time that changed her life at that party,
yes,
recognizes Wesley and is surprised that he kills things now. Which at first I was like, bitch, he kills things all the time.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking, if you're only thinking of sniveling Buffy season three version of Wesley, then yes, he was a toolbag twat of the ages.
Right.
And she should be surprised. And that's exactly where we're at right now. That's their relationship to each other.
Yeah.
He's the creepy old guy that made out with her when she was an 18-year-old.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which, fun fact, was 3 years ago, because the birthday that was supposed to, this episode takes place during, is her 21st birthday.
Man, it feels so much longer ago than that.
Yeah.
Even though in real life, this is Charisma Carpenter's like 30th,
right,
31st, something like that. Or, you know, whenever her birthday actually is. So she explains finding the how she found the address on the wall, and they're reminiscing ever so fondly about Wesley's not-so-great passing moment of intimacy with Cordelia.
Yep.
Gunn mentions a third person in the mix.
I really liked his line. What is it with you Sunnydale folks and repression? I mean, you three are the most denying-est folks I ever met.
I don't know, man. Have you ever met some Christians? Jeez. Go to the Midwest. You might change your mind, Gunn.
But well, they do have a lot of churches in Sunnydale.
That's true. Cordelia insists on seeing Angel despite Wesley's warnings against it, how the visions have taken toll on him,
yeah,
and he's retreated into himself and he's in isolation. And after only a few moments of watching David Boreanaz painfully try to act like he's gone batshit crazy.
He doesn't do it well.
And blathering nonsense. No, it's not good. She kisses him and takes the visions back, just like when Doyle gave her the visions. Cordy's memories come screaming back to her. And I got a side note here. So did Angel make out with Doyle? Did they have a gay man's before he died in the absence of Cordelia?
I think with all the evidence that has currently been shown on screen, Angel made out with Doyle.
I bet they had themselves a big old gay wedding at a big flea market, Rex. I bet they ran right on down to the courthouse and then stopped off at the Plot Hole Emporium. Welcome to the Plot Hole Emporium. Do you need to drive an episode forward with some absolutely wibbly wobbly timey wimey nonsense? Well, hop on pop and crawl inside the daddy wagon to pure gold. Fool's gold, that is. Because you're about to go to a little old place where the plots go to die, called time travel. How do you feel about some writing on the wall that logically couldn't possibly be there because the overwriting of history logically dictates that this particular piece of it never happened? Do you love it? We know your audience will lap it right up like the dogs they are. What about events that happened in the new timeline somehow being still valid once restoring the old timeline? I know, it's fucking nuts. Don't forget to buy your bag of Plot Hole Emporium deep fried nuts on your way out. They sound healthy, but I assure you they're not. We also fucked them. That's why every bag. That's why every bag of the Plot Hole Emporium trademark nuts have an extra glaze. That's why every bag of Plot Hole Emporium trademark nuts has an extra glaze of our secret ingredient. Daddy nuts. We nut all over your nuts. It's fucking nuts. Just like time travel. So come on down to the Plot Hole Emporium today. Keep on licking our plot nuts and we'll keep jizzing in your nut holes.
My... Some of the shit you come up with, man.
What do you mean? That's just an advertisement. I was just playing an advertisement. I don't know what you're talking about.
Jesus Christ.
Those nuts sound good, though, Rex.
No, they don't.
No, they don't. Just like time travel. You know what? Ever since Back to the Future, just stop it.
Right.
Can we just stop it? It's not any good anymore. Like Back to the Future did it the best we're ever going to do it, and they did it terrible because it's a bad plot device.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a great story. It yes. just makes zero possible sense.
Yeah.
That's why it's sci-fi. So that's fine.
Right.
That's fine. Just stop fucking it up.
I've read some time travel stories that can work, but like, yeah, this is definitely not one of them.
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, for this to work, they have to have, like I said, cast it similar to the Dawn spell.
Right.
Yeah. Cast a blanket spell on, in this case, everyone in the fucking movie and TV industry.
Yeah.
For the last 3 years that has come into contact with Cordelia and been in any way affected by her actions.
Yeah.
And undo and redo everything about Angel since that moment where he
right.
didn't run into Cordelia.
Yeah.
It's without changing just that specific moment. It's way too much for anyone to be able to handle.
Yeah.
With just a little cover-up spell.
Right.
But that's the only way that would make sense. Okay, they just rode over it, so everything's technically still there. We just changed everybody's fucking memories or something.
I mean, the simple fact that she was able to find the writing at the Hyperion, that one thing fucks it all up.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't do that. That's not how that works.
Yeah, you guys couldn't get some permanent marker remover. You just wallpapered over it. Jeez, guys.
Yeah. So anyway, we pick up where we left off. She kisses Angel, gets the powers back. That revives all her memories.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly Skip is in the room. She tells Skip to find a loophole of her dying because she needs to keep the visions so that this shit with Angel being crazy doesn't happen. She doesn't want this lie. And you know, Skip explains, okay, the only fucking way that you get to keep the visions is you get to be part demon. The process will be hellish, painful, worse than any vision you've had. And once you go through it, you might not be able to live a normal human life because whatever aspect of demon that it's going to give you is going to be fucking random.
Mm-hmm.
And good luck. You don't know what you're going to get. Cordy's, no, fuck you, demonize me already.
Without a second thought. Fucking do it already.
No hesitation
Why
whatsoever.
Why are we still talking about it? Skip. Fuck you.
And Skip puts his hand on her, and she screams in pain and then wakes up from her comatose body.
Mm-hmm. He does, he very clearly respects her.
Oh, yeah.
When he's like, it's been a pleasure being your guide. I really felt that.
Yeah.
Even though he was yelling at her the whole time, like, this is a bad decision. You're doing the wrong thing. Are you sure? And she, in spite of that, is like,
I get the idea that her getting this aspect of demon was what the powers that be wanted.
I bet she passed the test.
Exactly.
She's pure enough.
Exactly. And
that's why he didn't offer it earlier.
Right. But also, that's why he's here. Him being a guide for this doesn't make sense on the whole unless he's here as the person who's giving her the test.
Sure.
It makes more sense for his character to be here to give her to test her
yeah.
to see if she's worthy enough than to be the guide who's trying to talk her out of having the visions.
They clearly didn't care enough about Tammy.
Right.
They just let her blow the back of her skull out.
Yeah.
But she didn't.
And then, you know, keep her around to show off.
Yeah. She didn't nearly have the fortitude that Cordelia has either physically or emotionally.
Right. But no, I think it's fantastic. I love Skip. I hope we get to see him again.
Yeah, and he very much respects her selflessness. And now we're back in Angel's bedroom, back in our normal timeline.
Yep.
And she wakes up in bed screaming.
She's suddenly in a good mood, though. She seems to feel great, even though she woke up screaming.
Mm-hmm.
She immediately stands up. She stretches. She's in a great mood. She feels great. She's happy she has no tail or horns. I liked that little bit. She checks for tail and horns.
Mm-hmm.
And
happy to be solid again.
If you remember the episode of Buffy when she gets the aspect of a demon, the voices, hearing people's thoughts.
Who did?
Buffy.
Buffy did?
The aspect of the demon episode where she got to hear people's thoughts. In that episode, she was like, what? Am I going to get tails and a horn? Or horns and a tail?
Yeah.
And
that's a good callback.
A fun nod that she checks for horns and a tail.
Yeah.
But no, she feels great and she stands up. She's walking around and she's, you know, starts talking about the vision that she's having right now.
But she babbled on slightly about the vision of 171 Oak, but
yes.
And they're like, oh, you mean the three-mouthed demon or whatever? And she's like, oh, no, that's been taken care of by the one-armed man, which, in my opinion, no, it hasn't.
No, it hasn't.
It absolutely hasn't. But
that girl is dead.
The way
I'm just saying, my headcanon is they did, in fact, not solve that problem. And that girl summoned a demon and is dead.
Mm-hmm. Unless the powers that be, the way their stupid fucking wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey shit works, because they're just overwriting and overwriting. Since it did happen in the other timeline, then it did happen.
Right.
And so canonically, like, I think it's stupid and makes no sense, but canonically it did happen.
But yeah, she's having a vision. She starts reciting the vision. She's experiencing zero pain.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is just looking at her dumbstruck. And she's like, what? And zoom out, and it turns out she's floating several feet off the ground.
Just a little levitation. Not too much.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Gerarg.
Gerarg.
Is this for me? I must be ready. I need my strength.
Give me more!
Nights, I shall walk in the earth.
Hold on. You've got something in your eye.
What did you think of this episode, Rex?
The episode was not particularly well written, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think it was a great change of pace from everything else that's been going on. This is an old plot point that definitely needed revisiting.
Yes.
That being said, I'm not really seeing any grave consequences and side effects that she's supposed to endure. I mean, okay, the levitation, but she looks fine to me. Even Doyle got headaches from the visions.
Right.
It sounds like she hit the fucking jackpot.
I could have used a little bit more foreshadowing that the shit with the visions was getting quite as severe as this. But they didn't really hint that, like, she had been going to doctors or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, the writers did a good job on that point, because it plays into it with the idea that she's been hiding it for so long that we wouldn't have really gotten any foreshadowing. Yeah, fair.
But, you know, aside from the wonkiness of the time travel, alternate dimensional, whatever, the wonky bullshit they did, I think the flow of the episode was good. It was paced better than they've been doing.
Yeah, Skip was a very welcome recurring character.
Yeah. And it didn't feel ham-handed at all.
No.
And
it's been a long time coming. Like, I thought we had come to a head on Cordy's visions a while ago, but then they just didn't do anything about it.
Right.
And we've just been sitting on it, and it needed to be handled. So this was an important episode, even though it's not really the main season arc.
Right. Do you have a quote of the day?
I really don't. I took down zero quotes. I guess. Here, let me give it to Lorne. Oh, why, yes, Angel, my horn should grow back in a couple days. So kind of you to be concerned. I didn't really, probably something else. I wasn't thinking about it.
I'm probably going to go with, but pig drinking bloodsuckers are okay.
There you go.
Smart assness from Cordy. It's a Cordy episode. I think that works.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, it wasn't the kind of episode to generate a lot of quotes.
Yeah, not really. And that's not always a bad thing.
No. I mean, like I said, the plot of this episode wasn't the best written, but the character moments were great. And, like, it was a story that needed to happen. Cordy being center stage is always great. I love it. Yeah. That's about all I got.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been another episode of Ale with Angel. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Join our Facebook group where we love to interact with fans and share memes and stupid little things like that. If you'd like to support us, the best way you can do that is going to iTunes and giving us a review. If you give us a written review, you send us a screenshot to our email, we will send you a free sticker. And remember, if we get to 75 reviews, we are giving away a free hoodie to somebody who has given us a review. If you'd like to support us more directly, you can do that a couple of ways. You can buy our merch, beerwithbuffy.com/shop, or you can just give us your money outright at our Patreon, patreon.com/beerwithbuffy. Sometimes we do some special things on there. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can do that through Facebook, but also you can give us an email, beerwithbuffy@gmail.com, or as at the top of the episode, you can give us a call at our voicemail,
269-743-0783.
And remember, as Josh said, if you want your voicemail aired,
short and sweet.
Short and sweet.
Preferably funny.
Yes. We like funny. And as always, thank you to J.J. Treadway for opening transition music. This has been Ale with Angel. I'm Rex.
I'm Josh.
Have a good night.
Yeah.
Daddy's nuts. Or what did you call them? Fucking
Daddy's nuts. Trademarked. Something like that. Here, let me look it up real quick.
Those sound disgusting.
Singular. Daddy nut.
Daddy nut.
TM.
They sound like they'd be greasy.
Oh yeah.
And like dripping with. You have a sacred
bathroom. Sounds like you want some daddy nut.
No. No, I do not. Done. Why are we watching this?